side quest before we dive into the main thing. Have you ever seen the Instagram personality Kyriakos Grizzly?
Oh yeah, the guy who does like the weird like belly bounce style weightlifting.
Yeah, and like truly,
he's a rotund Cypriot man who like Phoebe, he like picks up like barbell weights, but like you kind of using his big belly. He does use his hands. And then he does these weird lifts that are like no lift you've ever seen, where he just kind of bounces the weight up and down on his belly and then puts it down again and then goes like, ah!
With truly mind-boggling amounts of weight, like well over 1,000 pounds. I've tried some of the lifts he does and I can't do a third of the weight that he does. He weighs like 450 pounds.
Yeah. You've tried the belly bounce. You've not got the belly for it. That's the problem.
One of my things on my to-do list over the next decade or so is to develop a really solid power belly.
Yeah, Kyriakos maxing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's an icon.
I just realized as well that me asking if he was a lesbian is connected to the conversation we were having before, and not and that sounds like quite a weird question to have asked. So I just want to make it clear there is a context for that question.
This is not out of the blue. Phoebe doesn't believe that all lesbians are rotund Cypriots who lift huge amounts of weight.
But look, I'm guessing that there are a few who fit that description.
And God bless them. More power to them, I say.
Those sound like people I would like to hang out with.
Yeah, exactly. If you fit that description right in to Patrick.
If you are a rotund Cypriot lesbian weightlifter, by all means, let me know. I'm guessing we would have a fantastic time hanging out.
You are the target audience of this podcast. Let it be known.
Absolutely. You are our people.
Yeah, let's hang.
Yeah. Hello and welcome back to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast that was once about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about the classical world and things of that nature. I am Milo Edwards and I'm joined, as ever, by my intrepid co-hosts, Phoebe Roy and Patrick Wyman. How we do it?
Okay. I thought for a minute, I thought you were going to say that it is now about Cypriot lesbians.
Yeah, I mean, it's also about, I mean, it was always about that. There's no
always,
now.
Always deep down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, it goes without saying.
I've been going
frankly.
Out with a Cypriot. Turns out she's a lesbian.
Yeah, believable.
If that's not a Seinfeld cold open, I don't know what is.
I don't know. Well, there's only one way to find out. You gotta give her a coffee and ask her what it is.
You've gotta take her to a barber.
She just called it coffee. What am I going to do with that?
Yeah.
Oh, now that's a bit. Yeah.
There we go. There we go. That's a bit and a half.
And that's how we ease into a discussion of season one, episode 8 of Those About to Die.
Absolutely.
About to die.
In a way that I would say is very Wyman coded, I watched this episode in the gym. Because that was the, I felt that was giving it the appropriate on my phone in glorious all glorious 6 inches of my phone, and I felt like that was the appropriate level of respect that this episode of Those About to Die deserved.
I mean,
about right.
That's correct, but I don't want to let the phrase "glorious 6 inches" go by without comment. I feel like we just need to just want you. I want you to know we could have gone somewhere with that and didn't.
Whom among us hasn't been in the gym staring at a glorious 6 inches? Truly, what else is it for?
That's true. Yeah, it's gray sweatpants season.
I tell you what, though, at my gym that would be very easy. I mean, I don't know about glorious, but there is a certain kind of guy who goes to my gym who is way too comfortable hanging dong in the locker room, who would just. Obviously, it's a changing room. Like you can be naked. That's fine. I accept that as part of the process. But there's a correct amount of time to be naked, in my view. And there are some people who are just like, you're doing this for fun. You're getting off on this. There's no. Why are you like walking around naked? Naked should be a stationary activity.
I accept this is part of the process is the most fucking Spock-like thing I've ever heard you say.
So, I mean, I've come
I
up with a
I appreciate it would be logical to be nude in this situation, but it doesn't mean I have to like it.
Yeah, there's a taxonomy of nude gym guys, mm-hmm. right? Like there are various types. The number one, the most commonly encountered one are the old dudes who just don't give a fuck.
Mm. Yeah.
And those in my gym. Yeah.
Yeah. That's number one. But then you start to get into interesting territory because you get to the completely oblivious who are just like not realizing that they're naked or for whatever reason.
Well, like pre-lapsarian innocence, like Garden of Eden, yeah. like they have yet to eat from the fruit of the tree of knowledge.
Yeah, that's like my son who walks around the house and just doesn't even think about it. He's like, oh, I don't have any clothes on. You're like, motherfucker, like, come on, dude. Like, nobody asked for this.
Well, this is the great tragedy of Winnie the Pooh. He is constantly stuck between two states, one of knowledge and one of innocence. That's why he's only got his top half clothed.
He's a liminal bear.
He's a liminal bear.
Unlike Paddington, who's gone the full sort of like flasher Mac and hat.
Oh yeah, fair thing. Yeah. Paddington's too clothed.
Yeah.
What's he playing at with his little little coat?
What's he hiding under there? Suicide vest.
That's the next
hat.
Paddington movie. Paddington gets radicalized by ISIS.
Mm. Yeah. Paddington Bear was actually in Shining Path. That's what no one wants to tell you. That's why he had to leave Peru in a hurry.
Yeah, he's taken up Maoism. The correct answer is Maoism.
There you go.
And then your final category is the ones who get off on it. And I feel like, are they becoming more common, would you say?
Yeah, possibly. There's definitely a cruising element at my gym, which I don't necessarily get like an obvious. I think like they know that I'm not participating, and therefore it's kind of I'm not fully in on it. You know, I don't necessarily. Yeah. But there's a hint of cruising, yeah. But you know,
a hint of cruising.
Yeah, just a vague sense of just
kind of it's sort of like an eau de toilette of cruising. It's not a parfum.
Yeah,
but it's definitely there, isn't it? Atmospheric cruising.
I used to go to a gym in Moscow, and I once saw, and they also had a similar problem in terms of like just dudes being naked way too much. And there was an old guy in there, and I saw him drying his balls under the hand dryer. Well, but he was completely naked except that he had his socks and shoes on. And I'm like, how do you get into that state? Talk me through it, brother. How did you come to be dressed in this way?
But the shoes.
Yeah.
The shoes is that's perversion.
Yeah.
Well, so he didn't want to get his feet wet.
Yeah.
I think like he has the shoes on or he has the socks on and he's like, well, I don't want to get my socks wet because I've got to walk someplace after this. And he's like, well, I might as well just slip the shoes on. But
so just don't put the socks on yet if you don't want to get your socks wet.
He doesn't want athlete's foot. You know, he doesn't want a fungal infection.
Yeah, he doesn't want athlete's balls from the.
See,
it's jock itch when it's athlete's foot on your balls.
I would rather have a fungal infection of the foot than have a fungal infection of the sole, which is what it sounds like this guy has.
I don't sell powder for that.
Well, they do, but it's
not
called
in this,
cocaine.
Not in this country.
There we go.
There you go. You got to meet up with a guy. You gotta meet up with the guy.
But look, we're not here to talk about that. We are here to talk about what I actually watched at the gym, which was, of course, Those About to Die, Season 1, Episode 8.
Boy.
Yeah.
Admirable, don't you think, that the eruption of Vesuvius, which in any normal show about this period of time would be an organizing event, has been completely fucking forgotten about.
Yeah. Amazing.
Like,
is it because it's just no longer relevant? Like, why did they include it?
Literally has been forgotten about in favor of guess what? Guess the fuck what? More chariot races. Chariot races.
This episode really made me want to stop watching this show, which
we can't.
It takes a lot.
We've only got two left.
I know. I know we can't. I know we can't.
And it's our job.
God damn, this was bad.
Yeah.
It was so bad. I have tried to find some positives here. I've tried so fucking hard to not relentlessly shit all over this.
You're talking in the tone of like an exasperated mother on Christmas Day who has not received a single word of thanks from the assembled group.
That's how I feel after having been made to watch this. It's like, I just, Jesus Christ. I it's some extraordinarily incompetent filmmaking. It's like not well done. We were talking about this in the group chat, but it feels a lot like World War One to me, in the sense that you can't believe that nobody just stood there at some point and yelled stop, like, we don't have to do this. This doesn't have to happen. I don't know how it got to this point.
Can I repeat the joke, please, that I made in the group chat?
Oh god, yes, please.
It's one Austro-Hungarian Duke Michael. How important could he possibly be? I just think it's the funniest thing I've ever said, and I'm sorry for showing how the sausage is made, but I did make this joke.
It was funny, earlier,
and I'm repeating it now.
I am always here for a Lucille Bluth joke. I'm always here for a Franz Ferdinand joke. And when you put the two together,
you're really cooking.
Someone at Amazon Prime Video killed one of the remaining Habsburgs, and via a series of kind of incidental things, it required them to make this show. like the knock-on, like butterfly effect ramifications of it, where they had to make a really bad show about the Colosseum.
Another thing is that one of the main characters in the last episode, presumably off screen, has now been executed for treason. There's this kind of subplot about his daughter being the Vestal Virgin who could have freed him but decides not to. And all the way through, I was like, oh, this is going to come up again. This is Chekhov's Vestal Virgin. This is going to come up again because presumably she's going to be pressed into service in some way to free one of the gladiators, probably Kwame. Mm. But now I'm starting to wonder if that's actually going to happen, or if they... Okay, so what I think must have taken place is you've got this writer's room, and then there was either a gas leak in the writer's room or a big guy came in, like, clubbed everyone to the ground. Then when they woke up, instead of being checked for concussion and so on, they just went right back to writing.
It's like an NFL football game used to be back in the 80s, when guys would get literally knocked unconscious and just get back up and go to the next play.
They've all got CTE in this writer's room. There's going to be a class action.
They're all wearing the bonnet to kind of keep their heads together.
Like babies whose skulls haven't fully grown together yet.
This is a fucking fontanelled TV show. That's what this show is.
Anyone writing on this show has a fontanelle.
that's a fontanelle. They have a fully fused skull.
I'm honest to God, like, I want to know the story of how this happened now. Like, I want to know precisely how all of these disparate pieces of shit were assembled into one giant shit pie, because, like,
sort of, it's shit king.
It's bad on so many levels. That's the part that really gets me, is it's not, there's not one thing that's wrong where you could be like, oh, you know, if they just fixed this, it would be, you know, it'd be a much better show. Or if they fixed that, it would be a much better show. Or if they recast this part, it's like a cavalcade of bullshit that,
yeah,
there is indeed a cavalcade of bullshit. Yeah, I don't understand why they didn't come up with a kind of Pliny the Elder character, because I feel like they could have done a kind of Knight's Tale style thing with kind of Pliny the Elder being a bit sassy.
They didn't have the money for Pliny the Elder. He was asking for too much.
That's true. Well, they could have afforded the younger
Pliny.
But
yeah. You can have the budget Pliny. You can have like the Timu Pliny.
Yeah,
right.
You can afford Jake Paul, but not Logan.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like writing his fucking panegyrics to Trajan.
Colosseum, Pliny the Elder versus Pliny the Younger. That'll get people in. That'll get bums on seats.
So, I was thinking about this as I was watching this episode, where there are storylines and characters and groups of characters who makes sense in the context of Rome as it actually existed in the first century AD.
Yeah.
So I think as I was thinking about this with the Spanish Brothers, who that is an archetypal story of the city of Rome in the imperial period, right? Like in the truest sense, we have reams of evidence for people who are more or less exactly like this, who come to Rome seeking out opportunity. They're pulled in from different corners of the empire, whether they're, you know, grain traders or doctors or horse breeders or whatever, you know, like Rome is a vacuum that sucks in talent from all over the empire. That is an incredibly realistic storyline. Like that as a premise makes perfect sense. As it's executed in the show, it's extraordinarily uncompelling. I'm kind of struggling with, because I don't get how you can take a real thing that should be resonant and it's just not.
Why are they all coded like they're from a modern Spain? I keep expecting them to say, oh, I'm going for a siesta. There's one point where he goes, I'm going back to Spain to buy a finca. And it's like, I'm pretty sure that they wouldn't be like using modern Spanish words.
Yeah, he wants a paella, is what he really wants.
Yeah. Like, exactly. They're just like, it's not Spain yet. It's like before, like the culture of what is now Spain was created by the Romans. These are, anyway.
He's saying he doesn't like it there because everyone there eats too early. Yeah.
They're also too tolerant of Muslims. That's a problem for
him. I leave Spain because there's too many British tourists. they come to. I'm from Benidorm, and they come. They buy the cheap buy to let holiday properties. They demand the sausage and mash. I say, please, it is 40 degrees of heat. But they don't listen to me. They say, bring it, you pussy, and I must. Yeah.
Sorry, that was my modern day Spaniard in ancient Rome riff.
No, it's perfect. He's just complaining about like pasty guys from Cornwall showing up.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds about right. So we do have a new Spanish brother who you are introduced to, and then is more or less immediately killed off before you have a chance to care even slightly that he is that he's immediately killed.
Yeah. Had we never seen him before?
No, because I'm just sitting there going, "Well, who the fuck is that? I don't know who that is."
We have met him before, but he has literally had fewer lines of dialogue than I have fingers on one hand to this point in the show, which is five.
Both me and Milo just like kind of having a little peer, like, you know what? I don't think we've ever counted Wyman's fingers.
Yeah, I realized after I said it, like,
thumb, please, Dr. Wyman. There we go.
A. Wyman over here.
I did almost lose this thumb at age 3, though, so it could have been 4.5.
What'd you do?
Who did you owe money to?
I wandered into the woodshed at my babysitter's house, and I flipped a button on, and it turned out that was the blade of a circular saw that came down and turned on and almost took my thumb off.
Wow. You were like, your babysitter's house was like a saw trap, like literally.
Yeah, I was going to say, what the hell kind of babysitter has a circular saw that can be accessed by a child?
Yeah, it raised some very serious questions for me as a 3-year-old. She lied to my parents and said I got it stuck in like a radio flyer wagon or something. And they believed her because I was fucking 3.
Yeah.
So.
Perfect. Wait, so do you actually remember this?
Yeah, it's one of my first memories.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So you like you eventually were old enough to grass up your babysitter.
Oh, for whatever. And my parents sent me back to this babysitter for another 2 years.
Wow.
And that's before we even get on to the people that she's got tied up in the basement and is setting a number of weird challenges to.
Of all of the things that happened at that babysitter's house, the worst was that she made us bologna and ketchup sandwiches. It wasn't me almost getting my thumb cut off. It was the bologna and ketchup sandwiches.
Yeah, that sounds disgusting.
It was real bad.
Americans love really, to talk really about British awful. Food, but bologna and ketchup sandwiches
But frankly, how dare you
That's as bad as anything we could come up with.
Until you've met a redneck adjacent woman who was born in the 1930s, you don't know bad food.
Yeah.
Like it puts to shame anything that could possibly have happened in the British Isles.
No amount of the sort of gravy filled frozen vegetables could could possibly amount to, yeah, the bologna and ketchup sandwich.
Just in case Joanne is A, still alive, and B, listening to this, I have clocked you, and I hope that I hope that you eventually got what you deserved, you bitch.
Wow.
Boy.
Well, I'm just saying, as a parent, if I put a small child in a situation where they got their thumb cut by a circular saw, I would perhaps feel remorse.
Yeah, but, I'd feel pretty shitty about that. I don't think
it's not great. It's not great.
It's not ideal. Yeah.
Though, okay, this I have now somehow backdoored us into a very strange conversation. Let's return to this shit show.
Yeah. Speaking of trauma, so the sort of the main, I guess, motivating plot point of the first half of the episode is that we get a chariot race, Phoebe's favorite thing. And
I'm starting to wonder whether it's like one of those things where, you know, like, you know, they keep threatening to kind of come up with like tailor-made TV shows, which are like specifically for you based on like your kind of like the stuff that you're consuming. So it's like a kind of algorithmic TV show. It's Friday. It's 4 o'clock. We're in the Black Mirror writing room and we're just like, I don't know, just put anything. That. How about that? So it's like that, but like the opposite of what I want to watch. Like my anti-algorithm.
Yeah, it's a torture.
Yeah. It's bizarro.
Yeah, you're in a saw trap.
I'm in a saw trap, except I keep having to watch chariot races. And at this point, I'm just like, you know what? You know what, Mr. Clown? I assume that's your honorific. Just get it over with. I'll die. I don't care.
Jigsaw is actually Philippe Goliath. That's what no one will tell you. But yeah, so basically, Scorpus and Andrea.
Is he called Jigsaw, the guy from the school? That's stupid.
Yeah, he is called. I mean, it's obviously a sort of a nom de plume.
I didn't like assume that. Oh yeah, this is my baby Jigsaw.
To Mr. and Mrs. Saw, a son.
Jig.
Yeah.
Named after
our favorite Irish dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And then like River Dance's mum showing up, just being like, "I'll fucking have you."
Yeah, she's a bit more of a hippie, hence the name River.
So, as you were.
And Andrea is the brother who dies, and he is the one who took over for Scorpus for one race for the gold faction, I guess. That's the implication.
Now he thinks he's hot shit.
Yeah. It's testament to how bad this show is that it's so hard to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit when, like, and what's his face? When Elliot is talking about Aura. No, it's not Aura. The other one, Jula, one of Calla's daughters, who he's like bang bang into, and there's this kind of almost like kind of Judd Apatow directed bit when like the brothers are sort of saying like, so when are we gonna meet this girl, and he's just like, I don't know, sometime. And you're like, okay, well, one of you is about to die. The show's called Those About to Die, and I think the reason it's called Those About to Die is not because of the famous kind of honorific call to the Emperor, you know, Those About to Die, salute you. I don't think that is what it's called. I think it's because they absolutely signpost so horribly who in this program is about to die. Because they just frame them like a kind of sort of very scrupulous, kind of very decent old cop on his last day before retirement. Every single character who dies is that guy. And that's...
He's got one
more chariot race before retirement. And then he's going to go to the countryside. And yeah.
He's going to buy a finca in his native Alicante.
So yeah, so it's not that it's like those about to die like the gladiators. Those about to die, it's like, oh, well, if you've just given this character you've really never seen before any kind of emotional scene or backstory, you know what he is? He is those about to die.
So I realize that this is a relatively minor complaint in the grand scheme of things here, but actually watching the chariot race, the way they show the guy, the what's his name, Andrea, the way they show him going ass over tea kettle when the wreck happens, the way they show him hitting the ground, he should be fucking dead instantly.
Yeah.
Like, he goes head first, going probably 30 miles an hour, ejected from a chariot and lands straight onto his head. Like, A, you should have a complete skull fracture. Mm-hmm. Every bone in your skull should be broken.
It's because the writers don't know about skull fractures because of the fontanelles.
This makes sense.
A stretchy, bendy skull.
Yeah, so they don't know about skull fractures.
They're unaware, yeah. But should also have instantly snapped his neck and severed a spinal cord. Then that's leaving aside all of the other assorted injuries that would have come up. How does he get to have a fucking deathbed scene? Like, that motherfucker was dead the minute he hit the ground.
Well, this is just a general issue with the show. There are two things that they cannot decide on. Three things. Number one, they cannot decide on whether or not Tenax is supposed to be a bad dude or not. They can't decide that. They can't decide how much money is a lot of money. So we have this kind of like, sort of like Dr. Evil style dancing around like, oh, 10 million sesterces. Like, yeah, just dial it back a little. Dial it back a little. And the third thing they can't decide is how resilient the human skull is. Because Tenax in the last episode is like being like literally having his clock cleaned, and you're like, he'd be dead. He'd be dead now. Why is he not dead?
Yeah, people in the writers' room are like, well, you could dip a kind of bit of toast in our brains from the top, and we'd be fine. So probably
we assume that applies here as well.
Yeah. We'd be absolutely fine. So, we've missed something out. There's a cold open.
Let's do the cold open in a minute. I'm going to finish covering the chariot race. So, Scorpus essentially deliberately kills Andrea, the youngest Spanish brother, in a fit of pique because, you know, he won a race when Scorpus wasn't there. And this is not good for Scorpus.
Scorpus.
And so then, you know, they have a big row.
This
Tenax
brings
takes
great
Scorpus
shame
aside.
To the name of Scorpus.
Exactly. And he's like, look, Scorpus wouldn't do that, would you, Scorpus? And Scorpus is like, Scorpus, it was an accident, Scorpus. And then one of the other brothers is like, you're a fucking lying Italian bitch, and I will come for you.
He does pretty much call him a lying Italian bitch. You'd listen to it and you'd think that maybe Marlo is exaggerating there, but he more or less does say that.
Yeah.
It's actually the best moment for that character. Yeah. It is by a pretty long stretch the most compelling bit of characterization we've seen.
Yeah.
So like up until this point, we've had absolutely no indication whatsoever that Scorpus is anything other than a big dumb guy who is good at chariot racing, right?
Loves to fuck. Loves
to fuck.
Big. Mm. Loves money.
Loves talking to about himself in the third person.
Loves to ride. Yeah. Loves to ride the chariot. There is absolutely no hint whatsoever that he is the kind of guy who deliberately kills another charioteer. They have changed him. This is what I put. This is how I put it in my note about it. Sure. They have altered him without notice from being a kind of Ryan Lochter and changed him into a Djokovic.
Yep. Yeah. They've taken him from George Best to Joey Barton seemingly overnight.
Yeah. He's McEnroe. Why is he McEnroe?
It's truly wild how quickly this happens. Because I felt like we were supposed to kind of sympathize with Scorpus at various points throughout this show. Mm. But now all of the sudden he's become a warning about the dangers of buying into one's own aura and reputation, which is like, they didn't, but in a serialized television series, you're supposed to use the extended time that we have with the characters to build toward these kinds of reveals, right? Like we're supposed to get invested in characters over the course of the season, so that when you do something like this,
it's been earned and makes sense. It's like, exactly. It is interesting that they do present that any kind of character alterations, as if all they're working with is words on a page, and they have to have somebody literally saying, oh, he's a completely different guy now, because they have almost forgotten about the visual possibilities of the medium.
Yeah. So this was fucking wild, because I watched this immediately after going to see Gladiator 2. And you can say a great many things about Ridley Scott, about Gladiator, about historical epic. But Ridley Scott is really good at telling a story with images. Like, yeah. He's really, really, really good at it. And you can question whether that's a story he should be telling or whether his take on that story is right. But like, at a raw technical level, like, the man doesn't need to put an enormous number of words on the page to show you to show you what's happening, or show you why it matters, or show you the stakes. So to go from watching that to watching this show was a quite striking come down, is the only way that I can put that, where
yeah.
You're like, this, like, they seem to be unaware that there is a visual language of putting things on a television screen that allows you as the viewer to learn things,
yeah,
and come to conclusions. Like, seems to have skipped them.
We've got this note here saying show don't tell. I have no idea how we're going to do that.
Yeah, let me tell you what we're going to do with that. Like, that's
tell
that's
don't show. That's the
no one should be learning anything from this show. I mean, watching it at the gym, it forced me to like not scroll on my phone, because I was watching it on my phone. And let me tell you, I was paying way too much attention to this show, like way more attention than it was ever intended to receive. And it made it a worse viewing experience. Once again, we're deep in the Wyman theory here.
It's not an attention-bearing show. It's got no load-bearing walls. Is the only, like...
Exactly. And so, yeah, basically, the upshot of all of this is that one of the brothers, Elia, who's like, you stupid Italian bitch, he storms out, and he decides he's going to go off and drive for the Blue Faction. Meanwhile, the third brother is now going to be the new driver for the Gold Faction. I presume some tensions will arise later. As my esteemed colleague Phoebe mentioned earlier, there is a preamble.
There's a cold open, which presumably they're sort of calling up Anthony Hopkins, being like, look, Anthony, we paid you for a certain number of hours on screen. Can you please just come back and just, no, I don't want to. It's fucking.
I'll come back, but I want to sound more Welsh this time. I want to do more of a Welsh voice than I was doing for the same character before.
Look, everybody else gets to change their accents.
Yeah, that
episode,
is true. Actually.
So I fail to see why I should be different. In fact, you know what? I want to make Vespasian Welsh entirely. Vespasian is Welsh.
Dreadful business, this Four Emperors, isn't it?
I really feel like they could have gone more niche with the accents. Like, what about Manx? Can we do Manx?
Yeah,
why not?
Something like that. Like, Breton? Like, why don't we have a Breton accent? I would like really get into the weeds with it here.
Yeah, I feel like they missed another opportunity. So we have young Domitian, who has been summoned by his father, who's like, oh, yeah, can you help me write a speech? You're not good at anything. You're not good at anything else. Got my gay son.
And gay son is... or thought daughter? The emperor's dilemma.
But what is so fucking weird is that there is plenty that was written about Domitian. Plenty of hostile material written about Domitian. And the reason there's plenty of hostile material written about Domitian is that he made a category error. If you're a Roman emperor, you could pretty much do what you wanted. What you couldn't do is you couldn't kill senators, because if you killed a senator, then the other senators would get pretty bitchy about it. And they're writing the history. So you can't have your senators.
And they were bitchy.
And we also have, okay, so what eventually happens to Domitian? Spoilers. What eventually happens to Domitian? He gets done in a palace coup. And he gets replaced by a very, very old fellow called Nerva, who is installed in place of him with the understanding that he adopts this young Spanish guy, not cool. It would be quite fun if like one of the Spanish charioteers was just like, yeah, I'm Traianus, Because that would be at least a little bit, like, it would be annoying, but at least it would be a bit wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But so
I'm
he
going
gets
to become emperor. I'm going to make everyone have small plates for every meal.
Yeah, that's
little
right.
Meatballs, maybe a cold omelet.
Which is like another thing because like we've completely forgotten that Antonia was trying to get her son to be the new emperor again. Like her son could be like somebody who we know for a fact is going to be the emperor in the future. Like why not? They're like they're fucking around with all the other historical aspects. So why not that? Anyway, so he was put in charge with the understanding he would adopt this young man called Trajan, who was a kind of brilliant kind of military mind. And the assumption was that Nerva was going to, you know, die pretty soon, which he did. And quite a lot.
His end of the bargain.
He filled his end of the bargain by dying. And so a bunch of these history writing senators, all of whom had advanced under Domitian, see how the tide is turning. And so they suddenly have to start being a little bit kind of, that guy. I hated him, he was a wanker. I really, really hated him. And that's why you have the, and that's at least partly why you have these extremely hostile accounts of the reigns of Domitian in Tacitus, in Pliny the Younger, et cetera, even though in Tacitus it is disguised as the reign of Tiberius. But at no point, bearing in mind how much they all hated him, at no point are they like, and also, guy's a bottom. At no point has this. So what? So the choice to make Domitian a bitchy twink is so weird and so homophobic that I can barely believe it as I'm watching it, because that wasn't even the hostile rumor about him.
Yeah, and it's not like if you wanted to make a show about Rome that deals honestly with Roman sexuality, you would have a shortage of opportunities to delve into the twinks. It's not like you have to invent an twink.
Yeah. The bread and butter upon which Roman society was built was twinks.
It's honestly, it's not like you had to invent a guy to do that. Like you're going to come across them in your everyday explorations of the city.
Through Suetonius, you'll find thousands.
You'll find riddled with twinks. I found the city of brick and I left it of twinks.
I left it a city of waxed hole. I left this city breedable.
Extraordinarily well groomed.
So he shows up and he starts like improvising and riffing this brilliant speech for Vespasian to give about how I don't have a ring of iron. Again, phrasing, I don't have a gold ring, and I'm going to build this brilliant amphitheater because for the men of Rome, for the men of iron. And Vespasian's like, oh, okay. Oh, you know, this is good. No, write that down. Write that down, what he's saying. Like, you know,
good shit.
Yeah. Because then he goes, he's like, oh, do you think we should build an amphitheater? And Domitian's like, yeah, I've been thinking about this. I think we should. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was the Flavian Amphitheater not started by Claudius, like some like 40 years earlier? Am I insane? Am I wrong about this? Because it took ages to build, right?
I know it took ages to build, but I don't think it was started by Claudius. I could be wrong.
It started early in Vespasian's reign.
There's like
because they had to tear down the Domus Aurea to build it.
But they didn't. Okay, so there's this whole thing about like this is another thing which really, really got my goat. Really, it really wound me up. It made me turn into a kind of daytime caller into LBC. I was just like, you know what? This really wound me up. This did, which is in a show which is so proudly ignorant of the historical context. Why have we suddenly got a bunch of shoehorned in exposition about Nero and his Domus Aurea, which is it because it wasn't entirely pulled down for the Flavian Amphitheater latterly the Colosseum, which by the way, it drives me absolutely up the wall that they haven't incorrectly called it the Colosseum, because I was so hoping that they were going to, and I was really looking forward to getting annoyed about them calling it the Colosseum, and they couldn't even do that for me. They had to give it the correct name, which is very, very angry. Like, they couldn't even be bothered to check whether or not the woman who Titus is supposed to be married to was indeed still married to him in 79 AD, which, again, spoilers, she was not. So, why is that there? Like, why is there this kind of, oh, shit, we've got to get some backstory about Nero and the Golden House and what happened in the year of the four emperors and, like, someone else. It's episode 8. Shouldn't we have done that in the first episode if we were going to do that?
Also, why does it matter at this point?
It doesn't. It doesn't at all.
Yeah, this is the, like, again, in a, these are the kinds of themes that if they mattered, you would seed them earlier. This is the same complaint about Ursus, the Ursus character, right? Like, if you're trying to show a dark reflection of supposedly your main character, why would you not draw that out and allow them to define one another through the contrast?
And have a big showdown.
Yeah.
Explore each other's bodies, whatever.
Yeah. It would have been hot.
Yeah.
But this is part of the problem with this show, I think. This is my overarching theory. It has no idea what it's trying to say. Mm. It has no identifiable themes that it's really invested in and that it has a take on, right? So, like, whenever you make a thing and you put themes in, you're posing questions about how the world is or how it should be, or like you are making some sort of statement, whether you think you are or not, that's what you're doing. And the perspective that you take on that is your theme. Mm. Like, how do we, and this show, to talk about it having themes is to give it a little too much credit, because it doesn't have a take on those things.
No, it's themeless. It's like a really kind of like confused school prom. Like, no one knows what they're doing because there's no theme.
Yeah, it's which is wild to think about, that you can get to the point of making now 8 episodes of a television series and you have no idea what the core themes are. Like, I mean, I'm sure that if you ask them, they would say it's about the dangers of power, the attractions of power, or, you know, the human nature tending toward the bad. And it's like, but you don't have any opinion on those things, whether it's good or bad that people are drawn to power, or whether it's good or bad that power corrupts, right? Like, they don't have a take on that.
they really don't. I sort of picture the kind of production exec kind of running through the script being like, here on page 5, can we put in a theme here? No?
Anything. Okay. Spin the big wheel.
This is an interesting theme. I don't know quite how we're gonna put that in, but, you know, let's just spitball how we're gonna put this theme in. Well, let's just not bother. What is everyone else up to? Right. We have a return to the so boring, it's actively baffling subplot about the shares in the blue faction and the woman with the shares in the blue faction.
Yeah, I don't understand that plot line at all. I don't even know who that woman is.
So she was the one whose husband gambled away her shares. Tenax cheated him on the bet.
Right.
And took the shares. He used those shares to get the seed money to start his gold faction.
I see.
So that was that. That's, but, like, who gives a shit?
Seriously, this
show is crowded with subplots that go nowhere and illustrate nothing and feature characters in whom we have zero investment. And why is one
of the Spanish brothers helping her? Why is he going to do with it?
He balls deep, brother. He wants to. Is she not attractive?
Fair. But, like, is he not the same one that's shagging one of Carla's daughters?
No.
That's the other one.
Oh, they could have made them at least not all look the same. Sorry, am I being racist against the Spanish?
Yeah, you might as well just call them Dagos now, Milo. Jesus.
These paella-faced brutes, they all look the same. They only want one thing, which is to defile our women.
So I found this
episode genuinely confusing because all of the Spanish brothers were like up to different things, but they all look the same.
The one who dies has a mustache and beard.
That's true, yeah.
Oh, we haven't even talked about the Scorpus's other murder that he commits in this episode.
Yeah, again, yeah. Like, why is Scorpus suddenly, like...
He's gone from zero murders to two.
Is this going to be like one of those fucking kind of like Midsummer Murders style plot where we find out that Scorpus is an evil twin?
We've got Tom Barnaby of the Vigiles coming in.
But would that not make more sense than the way that they've set it up to this point?
I mean, I guess so.
Absolutely, yes.
It's not a worse explanation for the character's behavior.
He's going to pull off the mask and he's Ursus. Fuck!
He kills
Zenon, the one who he... got gay panicked by.
Yeah. Who's the only witness? Because he was also in the crash with the Spanish brother who died.
Yeah, he's like, you deliberately killed that boy.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna tell everyone that you did that, which seems like spectacularly unwise as a threat.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is my least favorite. You get it in shows all the time. So Zenon is lying there with like both legs destroyed in braces, much like Tenax last week, and he's there and he's like, He's like, yeah, you should tell the faction owners that you killed that guy. Otherwise, I'm going to tell them for you. And this is prior to this, he's come in like offering him money, like, hey, maybe you just don't tell anyone about this. We can be friends. And it's like, you can still tell them, but just do it. Don't tell him you're going to do that. You're fucking paralyzed in bed. He's just going to strangle you, which is exactly what he does.
Which is exactly what he does. Yeah, it's like, why give this guy that you're threatening, why give him... So much to lose and nothing to lose by killing you.
A guy, mind you, that you just watched commit murder. That's the whole thing. You just watched him kill a dude.
You know, like, he would do it because
he's not
going to
kill me. That's illegal.
he can't kill two people in the same week. That's not allowed.
Come on.
Real striking increase in the number of Scorpus murders here in this episode.
Yeah.
200%. Increase of
Scorpus murder.
Murder.
Who are the other subplot
where Domitian goes down to the gladiator camp to just kind of like camply threaten Kwame. He wants to make him like eat an extravagant meal to like fatten him up for his gladiatorial fight, and Kwame's like no, and then he's like, well,
Kwame's
what if
on
I
hunger
shoot
strike.
Your friend?
Yeah, Kwame's on hunger strike. So he said, yeah,
like
what
Bobby Sands.
Fucking why though? Like we're just why? Like this. I'm so frustrated.
Those about to die, Mrs. Thatcher.
Yeah. we only have to get lucky once.
There's a real Belfast 1976 vibe to that.
I don't think that was that bad. My Bobby Sands impression. I think that was okay. Like, I know it's not perfect.
Yeah, no, it was.
But I think it was okay.
Yeah, no, my problem was with the plot line, not the impression. Like,
yeah, it's baffling. Like, why? Because Kwame, he's supposed to be like practical. He wants to get out. He wants to like save his sister. Like, yada yada yada. So, A. Why does he try and kill Domitian a few episodes ago? Makes no sense.
I don't know.
Could only hinder him. Even if he'd succeeded in killing Domitian, he would have then himself just been killed.
What do you think's going to happen if you like kill the emperor's brother? They're just going to go.
The Roman state will collapse.
Yeah.
And then in this episode, he's like, you know, he's already killed Flammer. Surely he's like, okay, well, I'm good at this. So if I do a few more of these fights, eventually I'll be able to like quit. You know, they'll let me go.
Yeah, I'll be able to, buy my freedom.
Yeah. But he's like, no, I'm going to do, like, a political protest in a country with no political rights of any kind.
Which I'm going to be really easily talked out of because I'm too stupid to disguise who my emotional connections are to. Because like it's really, because like yeah, the like the gladiator guy is like, yeah, that one's his mate, and Domitian's like, okay, well I'll just kill him.
Well,
yeah.
do you think they're not, also the not eating thing? You need to eat in order to train and fight. Mm-hmm. Do you think they're not gonna dump you in the fucking arena and make you fight anyway? You might as well eat the food.
You know like, what? He's not had a proper meal. He can't fight today. We'll have to try him again tomorrow.
He needs at least a protein bar. The bit that I thought was funniest about this scene, right, is that Domitian goes around and he's having the various gladiators like shot in like the arm or the leg with like a bow and arrow in turn to see if doing this kind of like torturing them will make Kwame, and he's like, no. And then eventually they, as you say, they go, yeah, no, that one's his mate, and they just threaten him with a bow and arrow. And Kwame's like, oh, fine, I'll eat the food. And there's like, just imagining the conversation between all of them after Domitian has left. Just like, being like, I thought we were mates. We talk. Yeah. What the fuck? Fucking thanks, mate. Oh yeah, it's a problem if they're going to shoot it. Oh, shooting me's fine, is it? Oh yeah, great.
Well, also, he spits the food out. He eats this giant mouthful of food, and he's chewing it, and then as soon as Domitian turns his back, he spits it out. Like, motherfucker, it's already in your mouth. You might as well swallow.
It's a very unfriendly atmosphere in the gladiator green room after that.
I literally had that experience with my son last week, because I peeled an orange for him, and he just spat it at me. He's like, this tastes terrible. I'm like, fuck you, it's an orange, bro. Like, that's... That one triggered me because it felt like it hit a little too close to home when Kwame spat the food out. I'm like, that is perfectly good food. Nobody wins from this. Like, what? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My mum said that when she was a kid, there was like one meal that my grandmother, who is not a particularly great cook, used to make that she really couldn't stand. And she used to surreptitiously spit it out and put it into like the front pockets of this like apron that she used to wear to eat dinner. And then when like the coast was clear, she would go out into the garden and feed the contents of her apron pocket to next door's cat. It was like the perfect crime. Yeah. All as like a 4-year-old. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
That is A+ work. Yeah. See, if that's the case,
Kwame should be doing that.
Yeah, no harm, no foul, right? Like the cat gets fed. The maker of the meal gets to feel good about it having been eaten. Nobody loses.
Exactly.
I've got another query about a plot line that is completely dropped or not really resolved properly, which is that, and this was never explained, which is that there's a kind of big reveal that Aura, one of Kala's daughters, is working for Ursus, which was revealed last episode. And there's a brief moment when she said, like, oh... Sorry, like, oh, that guy, like, he properly tried to kill you. I'm really sorry. And Kala's like, oh, it's okay. Come here. But that felt like it was supposed to be like a big reveal.
Was she working for him? I completely missed that.
He promised me he wasn't going to do that.
He literally said, and like, honestly, like, normally, if you can't trust a giant scarred creep with a completely mysterious accent and a huge knife, who can you trust? No one these days. No one.
Exactly.
It's true.
Yeah. Do you
first
not...
world out there.
I mean, like, unless I've completely misunderstood this reveal, but I definitely think there was a bit when it showed him being like, it showed him like talking to someone who's like, yeah, they're in there. And then like, they turn around and it's Aura and you're like, ah, shit. Are you going to do anything with it? Oh, no, you're not. Okay.
No.
Not going to do anything with that either. So
yeah, there's lots of throwaway stuff in this episode. Like, there's that. We have this bit with, you know, speaking of lesbians, if I may say, there's whichever one of Carla's daughters it is who's having the affair. It's the older daughter.
That's Aura.
Aura, right. Yeah, she's having an affair with this lady. And then they have this whole conversation about how women can be gladiators.
Yeah. Which
is like, it's great to see, isn't it? The little Roman, you know, even little Roman boys, they're getting behind the lionesses in the arena. You know, it's great to see. And I don't know what the point of it is as a vignette. Are they gonna become gladiators? Like, what point are they making?
They don't really have time to become gladiators, do they?
It's just the most puzzling thing. I've used this word many times, but I am baffled at the agglomeration of shit that has come together in this show. Like, I don't I'm baffled from the perspective of the animating ideas. I'm baffled from the logistical perspective of like putting the show together, like how nobody was like, what exactly is it that we're doing here? I'm baffled at the whole thing.
They have a bit where it looks like Tenax and Kala are about to snog and then they don't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A little bit.
I'm shipping them.
They kind
I'm
of
100% shipping
they
them.
Kind of have a, they kind of have like a kind of almost like kind of Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart like conversation when she's like, when he said like, ah, oh, when he says stuff like, I never expected you to try to make me a decent man. And she's like, ah, oh, decency has nothing to do with it. And you're like, yeah. What's happening? I don't understand what's happening. I don't have a, what? I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on in this scene. There's a whole thing where she's like, he's like, oh, I'm not the scum you think I am. Turns out I might have patrician blood. And she's like, oh, you foolish Romans. Like, you think blood is everything. And he's like, oh, this is Rome. Blood is everything. And you can sort of like almost imagine like him sort of going like, yeah, bing, 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 kind of, because he thinks he's like dropped a really, really good line. And I'm assuming that something's going to happen between these two, but it doesn't. But
presumably. If this show doesn't at least give us Kala doing the nasty, I feel like it will have failed on like, every metric.
Like Kala presenting Tenax to Aura and Julian being like, this is your new dad. He's like,
you don't have to call him dad. He's not trying to replace anyone.
You can call him Tenax. You can call him Uncle Tenax. How's that?
Uncle Tenny.
Uncle Tenny.
Oh, that's bad.
Tenno.
Tenno.
Yeah, we've also got a bit where because Tenax is working with Domitian, something to do with the factions, I don't know. Yeah. And he says to somebody, I can't remember who he says this to. He says, I am the legislator of the Edar Ludi. And I was like, you're the what? What does that mean? What is that supposed to be? Bearing in mind that the Edar Ludi is not a real position, it's something they made up for the purposes of this show. So what is the Edar Ludi's legislator? What's that?
I have institutional questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Institutional structure questions.
Yeah.
Like the, okay, well, and we haven't even gotten around to, I guess, what's supposed to be our driving plot for the last episodes, that Domitian with Tenax's help is going to kill Titus.
Yeah.
And become emperor.
Yeah. It's amazing how quickly also fucking Tenax accepts this. Like,
oh,
Domitian
yeah.
comes and
yeah.
he's like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So Titus is probably very close to working out that I was actually fucking with the grain shipments. So we've got to kill him like right now, because if we don't, he's going to kill me and then he will also kill you.
Yeah.
And then Tenax is like, okay, I guess we're killing the emperor.
Yeah.
It's like, guys, this is not like we've got to win a dodgeball contest to save the community center.
he accepts it really, really equably, doesn't he? He's just like, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
So what do you want to do today? Want to kill the emperor?
Like, he's gone, oh, can you stay late just to finish this PowerPoint? And he's like, oh, okay.
I mean, I had hoped to get away on time tonight. To mission. Yeah. I had.
Will I get overtime for this?
I want the emperor's head on my desk by 5 p.m.
Yeah,
it's me and the missus's anniversary. I promised I wouldn't forget this time.
You better not be killing the emperor. If I come down there and I find you conspiratoring,
you're killing the emperor, are you? Oh, well, that's what you said last time.
Yeah. Pat and Phoebe, did they off Titus this? Because at this point, he's been emperor for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, no. Titus died like pretty early on in his reign. He was emperor for 2 years, I think.
Okay, yeah.
I don't have my
average Tory prime minister.
Yeah, I don't have my neurodivergent special interests timeline to hand. But I think it was two years. Domitian didn't kill him. That's like that's totally made up. He like died of like he died of like a disease, right?
Yeah, this is strange. Yeah, because I didn't think he'd been killed. I mean, Domitian obviously has a bad reputation as an emperor, but yeah, I didn't think that he'd killed.
And again, I don't even think that that's like that was like the hostile rumor that he'd killed him.
Yeah, there are much later sources that accused Domitian of having poisoned him.
Right.
The more contemporary sources that are closer in time do not say that, though they do say Domitian was a shitty brother.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's
we're not disputing that.
Like the Gallaghers, those two.
Yeah, nobody is like, ah, yes, Domitian was a loving and caring brother, and he was right there on his brother's deathbed with him. So Titus, if I'm remembering correctly, like, dedicates all his big buildings that we were talking about in this episode, is there for the grand openings, and then, like, goes on a little vacation, gets sick, and dies. Like, so he doesn't die in Rome. He dies outside Rome. But as far as I know, there are no and Domitian doesn't go to see him as he's, like, sick and dying. But nobody contemporary or close to him, like Suetonius, who else? Cassius Dio?
Cassius Dio is quite a lot later, I think. Yeah. I think Cassius Dio is one of those, like, yeah, it says that, but it says that in Dio, and so we don't listen to it because it's ages later.
Yeah. So, but even Dio doesn't say that Domitian poisoned him or had him killed or whatever. Like, I think there are some substantially later sources that make the accusation, but why? I don't know. Here's the thing. By the time we get around to the reveal that Domitian is going to try to kill his brother and that Tenax is going to help him, I just didn't care. I'm completely uninvested in that plot line. Like, and I would like to know what happens between Calla and Tenax. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know that. I'd like to know whether Scorpus gets his by the end of the season.
Yeah.
Don't care whether Titus dies. Not relevant to my continued existence.
Well, we've got this kind of thing about the white faction guy who confirms to Titus that Domitian is responsible for the grain riots and wants to get in on the ground of, and like offers to like support all of his construction projects, and he wants to get on the ground with the Flavian amphitheater, and Titus is like, well, that's a money sink, and.
It's like owning a vintage Alfa Romeo. I mean, it's
but like it won't
honestly make out while you can.
But it won't be forever. And Titus is like, oh, okay, cool, and yeah, and then as we said, we have the funny scene where Domitian and Tenax is like just like chilling out, and Tenax is like, what are we doing today? And Domitian's like, oh, gonna kill my brother. Cool. Okay. Sweet. Is it okay if we run? Is it okay if we like stop by my place first? Because I kind of want to like, I don't know. I don't like these shoes. I want to change them. So can we just do that? Do we have to do that now, or can we just like swing by mine? Yeah.
Gotta get your hobnailed shoes.
Yeah.
I was
hoping to get a haircut today. Have I got time?
I left
to do
all
that?
My emperor murdering stuff back at my flat. So
can we just swing by and pick that? Like, you don't even need to come in. Just put the chariot on. Put the chariot on the hazards. I'll just run in.
Yeah. I'll be right back. It'll
so
take 3 minutes.
No, Tanat, stop being a dickhead. I'll be so quick. I will be so quick. In the time that we're having this conversation, I could have been upstairs, got my emperor murdering equipment, and come back down. In that time.
Yeah.
It's just fucking just baffling. I'm baffled.
We also missed a fun little bit of foreshadowing, which is that in the whole Edal Ludi conversation which precedes this, Tenax goes, how difficult would it be to flood the Colosseum? And it's like, okay, we're gonna get some really bad CGI in an episode or two's time.
Oh boy, we are. I think we're mainly done. But just if we've got some, just if I just go through my notes. There's a general complaint about Domitian being really good at writing speeches and going into a weird fugue state when he does it. There's the line, Nero never understood the mob, and there's a bit about him playing his lyre, and that's obviously supposed to be a bit of not the fiddle, playing his lyre. So. Oh yeah, we have one of the Judeans trying to kill Domitian, which is not brought up again.
And it's over so quickly, and it's never explained.
No, absolutely never explained. There's a sort of general kind of flat share comedy energy kind of suffusing this whole episode, like a little bit Odd Couple, a little bit I have got, as one note, can barely bloody believe it, why am I watching another chariot race?
I'll say this chariot race slightly better than some of the others better. We've seen.
Oh yeah, Titus is expecting a baby, but I'm not sure who this baby is meant to be, because his cousin that he was married to until 65. So this is like, that's like 15 years ago. He was like, yeah. I don't think he married again. I think like he stuck it out with like Berenike, and then she goes back to Judea, and then you never hear of her again, and then Titus dies.
He was the Volcel Emperor. He was a MGTOW.
We've got a bit when Aaliyah goes to Antonia and is like, I want to ride for you, and she's like, yeah, but you have no experience and you've never done it before. But then we have this kind of weird kind of Roman Danny Dyer type bit where someone says, your brother knew what he was getting himself into, and he's like, no, I'm gonna learn to ride a chariot, and Antonia's like, oh no, he may have never done it before and he's completely untrained and completely inexperienced, but he is powered by hatred, and as such, like, again, what do you mean he's what does that mean? If anything, that would make him a worse charioteer, surely.
Yeah, and then he does like a test chariot ride, and he's like, and they're like, yeah, he's really quick, and it's like, well, how, given that he's never done it before?
You'd like to see more of a learning curve.
So we have another thing here about a montage.
This was prime montage territory.
Yeah. Yeah.
No montage.
So I'll just
could have had him, you know, carrying a chariot wheel up the steps of the Senate.
getting yelled at.
Punching a big side of mutton.
Didn't have the editing budget to put in a montage there.
I had an additional complaint about Tenex being the legislator of the ideal Ludi, and I've just put underneath that's real. Look, I'm the dungeon master, so about that. Callus just made a big thing.
I hate it when people question me at the BDSM club.
Callus just made a thing about Tenax's cruelty, but like when? We have not seen him being cruel basically even once. Yeah, something sets him apart. It's hatred. Does it really?
Feels like hatred is a really strong, a really strongly shared characteristic across most of these characters.
Yeah, I mean, I hate them.
Oh, Domitian has his Greek twink killed for shagging someone else.
Sure.
For some reason. Yeah.
Never without my permission, he says.
Wait, no, I think he has the other person killed. The twink he spares.
He's going to do something fucked up to the twink.
Yeah, he has him dragged off.
But the twink is upset because he's killing the third guy.
The twink is upset because the twink thinks he's in for it.
Yeah, he has him like kind of dragged away, like he's presumably found him, I don't know, breaking plates or something.
I mean, look, this does seem to be a lot of polycule dynamics, you know? It's all going well, and then suddenly someone's got a knife, and it's a problem.
Hermes is suddenly pursuing them all across state lines.
It's all, but at the start, it's all, we've got a consent spreadsheet. It's actually one of the most moral ways to organize your sex life. And then before you know it, you know, that your bodyguards are slitting someone's throat. It's a messy business.
Someone's expecting me to do the dishes. It's a nightmare. I've got another note that says Aaliyah is again being weird about a horse. He's weird about horses. Oh, and then, then my final complaint is that the last line is someone watching Aaliyah do his charioting, and just says, he's fast, very fast, and that's the end. What an incredible damp squib of an ending.
Yeah.
Baffling.
Truly baffling.
Yeah.
Well,
what can we
two
say?
Two more episodes.
Yeah, two more episodes of this, and then we can do Megalopolis.
We can do Megalopolis.
If there is a second season of this show, mm-hmm. I will make sure that I never own any stock in any companies that were involved in the making of this.
Yeah.
Okay, that's like,
you have to become a domestic terrorist if this gets another season.
That's quite a complicated pledge, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Well, I will make sure that my financial interests are never aligned with any of the people who thought that was a
good
idea.
You're going to morally divest.
This is the BDS movement, but for anybody involved in making those
adaptations. Okay.
Yeah, Scorpus must answer at The Hague for his crimes. And, and until he does, I'm not buying Italian products. Okay? I'm not buying anything from Amazon.
I'm not buying any scorpions. Nope. I'll tell you that.
No,
I'll tell you that
on,
for kickoff.
On the off chance. Yeah, yeah, they failed to kill him for a kickoff. Yeah. So that's...
yeah, it's a lot of questions about the competence of the scorpions.
Not buying
here.
Any horses. And that, nope. And honestly, nope. If I'm not buying horses, then that, like, that has a significant negative effect on how my finances are looking in the coming year. So
it's true. Yeah. Very. I'm deeply invested in horses.
Yeah.
At this point, a lot of equity
I
in horses.
I just like them. I like their glossy flanks.
Equity in the most literal sense.
Well played. Yeah. Well played, sir.
All right. That's probably as good a place as any to leave it.
Jesus Christ.
If you are listening to this, this is a bonus one, I believe, a Patreon special. So thank you very much for being a Patreon subscriber. You're the best. Thank you for supporting the show. And if you want even more Roman-style discussion, there is Romecast Season 2 available. I'll put a link in the notes. That's a one-off download. It's $15. You can listen to the whole first season for free also at the Romecast Patreon. So check that out. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.